Stand by.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And this is Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That with Jeff and Gretchen, show number 39.
Or three.
Or three with Gretchen. But the show, the name, This and That podcast, is number 39. So I think that's what matters.
Wow, you're coming up on some milestones.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of podcasters out there that reach their number, show number 50
mm-hmm.
or show number 100, and they make a big deal out of it. So
you got 11 more to go.
We have 11 more to go. If you're still with me, still in the studio. So for those of you that are used to the great, great sound of this podcast, you're probably hearing a buzz in the background. That's because Gretchen is buzzing with excitement.
Oh, that's keeping us sane today.
Yeah, it's the air conditioning. I'm sorry, I'm sacrificing some audio quality to have the AC on because we're recording at, about 4:45, the hottest time in Texas. And it's about, 104 out there or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you like your first July in Dallas?
Nobody told me it was going to be in triple digits every single day for like 3.5-4 months.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fun. Know, now that I've discovered that, wow, did you know that in the 20th century, air conditioning is one of the most important inventions, and there's definitely a reason why? And it's totally changed the way we live. And
totally.
I thank my heating and air conditioning man every day that it works well.
Do you call him up every day?
I do. I tell him, thank you so much for keeping it going.
Wow. Mm. He must be very grateful.
But you needed to live here. I just can't imagine how people would have lived here very comfortably.
No, in fact, the Dallas-Fort Worth area and the South in general really didn't grow until, the 30s when air conditioning was invented? But there were people, this house that we're in right now, the Casa Pecana Studios, this house, I don't laugh, that's what it's called. The house is called Casa Pecana, so my friends named it. Actually, that's what I named it.
Did you name your car, too?
No.
Does it have
that's
a
stupid. That's just, why would I name a car? That's just dumb.
I saw somebody yesterday, it was stenciled on the side, his name, El Marcano or something.
Oh my gosh, really?
No, I think it might have been El Diablo, which is Ooh. Even worse.
Maybe it should be like El Macho. Put that on my car.
I think that should be on my car.
Maybe like flames on the side. Would that get me chicks?
Yeah, that'll get you something.
No, but the house is Casa Pecana.
Oh, well, I didn't know I was in Casa Pecano.
House of Pecans.
I know.
For those not Spanish speakers. No, it's goofy, but I think it's funny. So this is the Casa Pecana Studios. Anyway, this house, the reason I brought that up is from 1918, and people lived here. The whole neighborhood is from the 1918s and the 20s, and I live in a craftsman bungalow, and most craftsman bungalows at the time had sleeping porches. So what sleeping porches were, they were a porch totally encased, three sides at least, in screen door
mesh. Oh, mm-hmm. They're mesh. All screened in, so
yeah,
they didn't get eaten by mosquitoes.
So you didn't get eaten by the mosquitoes, but you get a breeze.
Wow. Oh,
not a
breeze.
Great breeze. I know.
The breeze is about 100, in case anybody's thinking that it's nice and cooling.
You must get used to that. I don't know.
I think you do. Your body adjusts to it. Just like if you move from the warm to the cold, your blood thickens.
Right.
So I hope my blood is thinning, because it's pretty damn warm here.
Yeah. But it doesn't last that long. And you know what I keep telling people? If you're in a different part of the country, except for California, if you're in and even L.A., you know this better than mm-hmm. me. Even L.A. gets pretty hot during the summertime.
Oh, it does. August and September, it's definitely warm and smoggy. But I didn't realize we have smog here, too. That's the other thing.
Yeah, we do have a little bit.
Holy cow, that's like, we're like worse than New York, I think. I mean, worse than Florida. I mean, we're up there on the list.
Yeah, we are up there on the list. And have you looked at the alerts?
Yeah, I've been seeing them.
Yeah, when it's hot like this, almost every day is like a yellow or red alert. It's amazing.
Different kinds of alerts, too. We've got the ozone alert and some other... I mean, it's interesting how they break it down.
Right. I guess I was considering the ozone alert, but yeah, they've got all the different allergy alerts here.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, a lot of news going on. Mm-hmm. What's up with this Hezbollah? You know, I was in the studio. Well, I'm in the studio now, but I was playing electric guitar this morning, And I don't have it ready yet, but I was writing a girl, I was writing a song called My Hezbollah Girl. It's a rocker. It's kind of fun. It has to do with missiles and, you know, my love missile and things like that. I think it's got real potential. So.
She might be in hiding right
so,
now.
So we'll try to have, yeah.
Or she might be in a bomb shelter, just depending.
So we might try to have that.
Hey, if anybody really wants to know anything about it, I was looking around. CNN has a really good page to explain really clearly what's going on in the Middle East. If you're not sure who the players are, it's actually like Hezbollah 101.
Wow.
So if you want to learn,
so
good place to go.
So anyway, it's in the fifth day. They've been escalating. It's getting worse and worse. It's just like kids. It's just like two kids lobbing bigger and bigger missiles and hitting bigger and bigger targets.
It
would be funny to observe if it wasn't so serious.
Did you hear Newt Gingrich say this morning that it's been going on 58 years, so it's not just a five-day war?
No, you didn't watch Meet the Press, did you? No,
I did.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of my topics. Okay, as long as we're talking about Meet the Press.
Yeah.
Joe Biden, Newt Gingrich.
Mm-hmm.
They're on there talking about the whole thing.
I've got to say, they're very knowledgeable.
This is exactly what I'm saying.
They were good.
They were both really smart. Mm-hmm. They were really well prepared.
Mm-hmm.
They were both very passionate about what they believed.
Newt was
absolutely reasonable,
very compassionate towards his buddy George W.
They were both pretty bad things to say. They were both basically saying that the Bush administration just has no policy when it comes to the Middle East, when it comes to the Iraq thing, and it all hasn't. It's been a major failure. And they've got ideas in place. And I'm thinking, Gretchen, when I was watching this show, I was thinking, these two, now I know Newt's not and Biden is, but these are the kind of people, smart, frankly, smarter than me. These are the kind of people I want creating policy for us. I don't want George Bush. I don't want Condi Rice. And I know Condi is a smart person. But could you imagine George Bush with those two on Meet the Press this morning?
I know.
Can you imagine how it would look? He can't hold a candle. And I was watching it and I started thinking about that, and it just pissed me off.
I know.
It's like, I want a president that can sit down and be the smartest guy in the room.
Did you hear the poll about Britons? You know, the actual British people who really love us, but they actually, 75% of them think Bush is stupid.
Yeah.
Stupid. This is our leader of the free world. And they describe him, if they have to pick an adjective, they say stupid. That is really sad.
Yeah, it is sad. And what's more serious is the things they were saying this morning was that, you know, we just have lost a lot of credibility in the world. And so we come to the table with our ideas and our thoughts, and mm-hmm. we're not given the credence that we used to be, or the credibility that we used to be.
Because there's no actions backing up the words.
We keep saying this stuff and we don't do anything.
And let's take that back. We did something with Iraq.
Yeah.
We did do a little something there. Oh, yeah, I don't remember exactly what they did that really set us off, except maybe they had a little bit of oil.
Yeah, exactly.
But
So here's my state. Here's my whole thing about mm-hmm. about Hezbollah. Okay, Hezbollah is both a political
mm-hmm.
and a terrorist organization.
Yes.
Where I sit, and this is my own opinion, I think as a political organization, they have absolutely every right to exist and to thrive. And if they can create, if they can have a political policy and enough popularity in the countries where they are active to gain sort of control of some of those sovereign states, then they have every right to instigate that policy, implement it, I mean. And heck, if they want to, you know, wage war against another sovereign state, that is their right. So they have a right to exist. But as a terrorist organization, in my opinion,
don't you think waging war is sort of terrorism?
I think if it's a sovereign state, it's a little bit different. I think the rules of the way the international world works, it's different. I think it's a sovereign state can declare war on another sovereign state without it being terrorism. What I think as a non-sovereign state, as a terrorist outfit, I think every nation in the world should exterminate it, completely exterminate it. And that means Syria, that means Iran, that means Israel, and that means the U.S. Everyone. Just like we should all exterminate Al-Qaeda, just like we should all exterminate Hamas. Hamas is the same sort of bipolar thing that
Hezbollah is. It's both. It should exist as a political organization, not as a terrorist. We should, as a world, stand up and say there is no room for terrorism, and everybody should join hands on that. Of course, you know, that's
Everybody did join hands. I mean, at least the nations in the G8 did all join hands, and that's one reason that Bush and Putin became fast friends in 01, is he was so quick to come to the table and say, yes, we support the fact that there should be no terrorism.
Right.
However, here we are, 5 years later, and look at where the world is. So,
yeah.
Can we wipe it out? I don't think so, because we're so hated worldwide.
Well, you'll never wipe out terrorism. I mean, heck, I remember...
Well, global terrorism. 20,
right, global terrorism. But you can minimize it, I think, with world efforts. Anyways.
Well, that's...
I don't know how to do it, because to get rid of Hezbollah, you would need Iran and Syria to say, just like Lebanon, just to say, you know, we don't want this. But they're actually supporting Hezbollah. So, you know, Hezbollah is acting in their interest.
Well, I think terrorism is still on the agenda at the G8 summit, which is also going on now.
Yes, it is.
I wanted to know more about that because, you know, it's always in the news for 3 days in July.
Yeah.
That's where we all hear about it. And I was just wondering, so where'd this come from? And now that I've read a little bit about it and I know a bit of the history, I do remember when it started, because it's not that old. And it started initially in 1973 as a result of the oil crisis. And 1975, it was... French President D'Estaing, who asked six heads of major countries to come and have a little powwow. And from there, it keeps growing and growing. And every other year, another country's been asked to, went from the group of six to the group of seven to the group of eight.
In fact, it was just G7 fairly recently.
It was G7, right? And that's when we invited the United Kingdom. And now
it is an economic thing, right? It's an economic summit.
It's a transnational administration, and they cover all kinds of topics like health, law enforcement, labor, development of energy, the environment, foreign policies, justice, terrorism, and trade.
Okay.
And so they have all these committees that work. And the only thing we really hear about is when the eight key leaders get together. But there's a lot of other people there, too, like the presidents of the World Banks are there, and all the ministers of various finances and committees are there. But these eight countries, why it's pretty significant is they control 65% of the world economy. And I kept thinking, okay, so why is not China not there? Well, the other part of it is it's G8 plus 5, and the five that are probably going to be invited in the future are the People's Republic of China, Mexico, India, Brazil, and South Africa. Mm. And so they do meet when they talk about the financial part of it. But what we only hear about are the key eight, which how many people in the United States do you think could even name the eight, even though it's in the news every day right now?
Probably not too many.
Yeah, probably not
too many. I'm thinking if I could do it.
Even though we live in this global economy, how many people
all right,
really...
Let me see if I can do it. Do you have the list there?
Of course I have
all
the list.
Right. United States,
mm-hmm.
Japan,
mm-hmm.
Russia,
yep.
France,
mm-hmm.
Great Britain,
yep.
Germany.
Uh-huh.
What am I at?
Two more.
Six? Two more. Okay, let's see.
A real quiet one.
Canada.
Yeah.
And is it the real quiet one coming up?
No, that was
that the quiet one?
That was the quiet one.
Shucks.
That was the quiet one.
Well, I'm going to say it's another...
this is a loud, boisterous one that just won the World Cup.
Just watch the game. Italy, sorry. Yeah,
yes.
Italy.
Italy.
Oh, okay. I didn't know Italy was G8, so...
There you go.
There
surprise,
you go.
Surprise, isn't it?
Well, I'm always surprised by Italy.
They bring the good food to the table.
I was going
to
say, I think we talked about this last time. Italy is just this smallish country with very few people, and they're in the G8.
Yeah, they're in the G8. Oh, come on. We shouldn't...
I mean, the culture is... You know, Italian food is one of the most staples, the most common denominator of foods all around the world, just about.
Food,
you know,
fashion,
it's
cars,
everywhere.
And now soccer.
Cars, fashion, soccer. It's everywhere.
And they do have a little bit to do with the 65% of the world economy.
They must. But I'll tell you, there's such a small group of people that don't really work that hard.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing. They get a lot out of their...
You are going to hear it from your Italian listeners, and I am half Italian.
We have Italian Americans are different, but, you know... No, I love Italy, and I love the Italians. They've got a great lifestyle, and they're very cool. They're very cool, hip, and people that know how to have fun. But they must get a lot out of their 5-hour work days to be in the G8. That's all I'm saying.
And do you remember last year, right leading up to the G8, what you were doing? You were probably watching Live 8, which were all the concerts around the world.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
For the Aid for
Africa.
That's
right. That was out in Philadelphia, wasn't it?
It was all over the world. It was London, Philadelphia, Edinburgh. It was everywhere.
Okay.
And actually, that was what came out of last year. I think it was $50 billion were contributed to Africa.
Yes.
Not just from those concerts, but that's what the leaders got together. And even though they fell far short of what the public had wanted, they did get together and make some resolutions. And they also talked last year about global warming and terrorism because the attacks on London subway just happened. So
right.
So this year they're talking about nuclear issues, they're talking about the Middle East. So we'll see if anything comes out of it. There is official websites for it, and you can go and you can see all the doctrines that they pass. And it's real interesting because one particular country wants one statement. And so like Germany got the statement on global warming that they wanted.
Wow.
But then everybody has to resolve to do it, and I think that's where it gets a little tough.
You know, the two things that came out in the last couple of days, I know we're being a little bit topical on this show, where the UN got together and made one statement against North Korea. North Korea, I think it was like 45 seconds later, said, you know, yes, essentially this is bullshit, we'll ignore it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
You know, hooey, we spit on you.
Yes.
They literally spent 2 weeks getting the language right so that China would sign on.
Right.
But there's no teeth. There's nothing there.
It was a very Monty Python moment, wasn't it?
It was very much so. They worked on these guys were working on language, you know, for 2 weeks. They do absolutely nothing. You want to know what productivity they had? Zero.
No,
zero.
They produced a nicely written document.
That was probably very grammatically correct.
Mm-hmm. In all languages.
Yes. Well, then today, this is the G8. They came up with a group statement about the Israel
statement?
Hezbollah thing.
Uh-huh.
And again, very, very weak. Even Bush was basically, they all agreed. They just said Israel
That's
should
a bad
show
thing.
Constraint.
It's a bad thing.
Well, you know, back to this thing. Here's the historical deal. Israel pulled out of South Lebanon 5 years ago with the agreement that the Lebanese government would come in and take that area
right.
and help mm-hmm. help protect Israel from it.
Right.
Well, they never
happen.
Did that. Never happened. Hezbollah came in immediately and set up something like 10,000 missiles pointing at Israel. So basically, Israel has lived with this for 5 years. So this kidnapping that came about, you know, of two
mm-hmm.
people,
of
it was just a
soldiers.
Spark that they were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
They always wanted to get rid of Hezbollah. In my opinion, they have a right to get rid of Hezbollah. Now, that doesn't preclude diplomatic efforts that need to happen. You know, we need to make Lebanon stronger, probably. We need to put a lot of pressure on Syria and Iran to get rid of Hezbollah.
Well, all the shuttle diplomacy has ended, and that's also cause for concern, too.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to work on your song, Hezbollah Girl.
Yeah, that might be a nice, it might be a nice bridge.
Keep working on it.
It might be a nice cultural bridge. One thing about the World Cup I wanted to say.
Yes.
Did you watch it at all?
I watched the overtime.
Okay. Well, that was good. So did you see the headbutt?
Yes.
The headbutt heard across the world. All right. So apparently this Marco Materazzi from Italy said something about Zidane's mom.
Was a terrorist.
Mom was a terrorist?
No, I heard that he said something about he was a terrorist.
I think it was about his mom.
It was about his mom.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
My only point here was, I was going to say, is that's ridiculous to get upset about an insult about your mother. It's so 11-year-old. You know, I know they're in overtime. I know they're tired. But Marco Materazzi doesn't know Zinedine Zidane's mom. Now, if he did, then that would be a different story. You know, I met your mom. She smells and wears army boots, and she's a skank. And I met her, so I know. That would mean something. I'd probably headbutt the guy. But to just have this generic mom's comment, or in your case, if it's terrorist, this generic terrorist comment? Come on, they're playing a game. Of course they're trying to get each other's dander up.
And he did a really good job, right?
And this guy's a professional. Yeah. In his last game, it's just unbelievable. I don't care. The reason it got me is because I saw there's some controversy. Well, he shouldn't have said anything about his mother. Well, if he doesn't know his mom, it's just a generic insult.
Right.
It means nothing. Are you insulted if I say something about your mom who I've never met?
No.
And I have no idea anything about?
It's interesting. They must be speaking the same language then if they understood each other.
Mama.
Right?
I mean, come on. Mama. What does that mean? Mama is... It's a terrorist. That's kind of universal, you know?
Como bella c'è la luna, brille strette, strette con e butto belle fasteggia sotto il cielo di Roma. Down each avenue or via street or strada, you can see him disappearing two by two on an evening in Roma. Do they take him for a
spin? I got a story here. Can I go?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
I'm into rapping and I'm into grilling. You know what I mean? By grilling? Do you know what grilling is? Do you know what a grill is?
Yes.
Okay, what is a grill?
Are we talking the thing that cooks meat?
You are so old.
Sorry.
All right.
What is today's grill?
Today's grill. Well, the city of Arlington, one of our suburbs here, they recently, the school system said no more grills in school. So I kind of did what you did. I said, mean, kids are bringing barbecue grills. That's kind of cool, but I can see why they would distract. Well, that's not the kind of grill they were talking about. So here's what a grill is. A grill is something, and this is very popular, that kids are wearing. They put in their teeth, their mouth jewelry. And I went to the websites, all kinds of websites selling grills.
Okay.
And they're very fancy. There's expensive ones. They're all range in price from $200 to $10,000, just like normal jewelry, from fake diamonds to real diamonds studded.
Okay.
And I even saw some pictures of people with grills in their mouth, and it's the ugliest thing I've ever seen. It's truly ugly.
Are they caps for your teeth in colors?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What colors?
Gold and silver, mostly platinum.
Mm. Yeah. And do they have words on them and diamonds and stuff?
I think some of them do. I think some of them do have words, like tough or sexy. They are really weird. And so the other thing that they're banning, have you ever heard of, what is this called, tall trees?
No.
Tall trees are oversized shirts that hang to the knees. Nah, I don't care about that. You know, whatever. Also, have you ever heard of gauging?
No.
That's the practice of stretching out your earlobes.
Oh, okay. I've seen it, but I didn't know what it was called.
So what you do is put progressively bigger size studs in there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're also banning those two things. But the grilling is what got me, because I went to the website, I ordered a couple. I think it's going to look hip at work. Now, the only problem is you can't really talk with them in.
Oops. So if you're trying to do your job and it involves speaking,
yeah.
It could be a problem.
Right. Which is kind of circling back to why I agree they should ban grills at school. It's a no-brainer. If you can't talk, you're in it for fashion.
So they're not going to ban them at your company?
They haven't yet. So I might be the test case. People say, hey, I have every right to wear my grill, man. Lay off my grill. All right. Here's what some teenager said about the city of Arlington. One freshman said, I would think it would be the student's choice. I don't really see what the big deal is. Okay, that's fair. Another person said, I am not about to spend all that money and not be able to wear it. Okay, and now the last quote is something that I think would probably make me wear a grill. Well, if I was that age, it said, it attracts a lot of girls. And that is why, this is my big thesis on men, especially teenage boys, is that is why boys are wearing the stupidest. White teeth are nice looking, right? To cover it up in this ugly jewelry, it's really nasty looking. It looks like imagine somebody with false teeth.
Uh-huh.
It kind of looks like that.
Right.
But if it meant getting girls, heck, I'd be wearing it.
But Jeff, let me point out the kind of girls that those men are getting are the girls that wear the grills.
I'm sure you have to take the grills out to make out. So anyways, that's my story on grilling.
Okay. Well, I have something sort of topical.
Okay.
Not as topical as that, but I think I mentioned the last podcast that, you know, Albert Einstein's been dead 50 years, but last year his estate still made $20 million.
Right.
And that got me to thinking. Okay, famous scientist, dead 50 years. Can you name a living scientist?
The obvious one is Hawking.
Hi, Stephen Hawking.
Bow.
Besides him, can anybody think of a living scientist that you can even know the name of?
Copernicus?
I know his theories come around, and they are you reading the Star again? The National Enquirer?
No, no.
Because he's always his you know he's always mentioned on that. But,
is it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. You can't name that, and you're a smart person, and you're up to date. But I don't think too many people, your listeners, could name a living scientist either. But I bet you could name 10 A-list stars, right?
Sure. Easy.
I'm sure you can, because they're on the cover of those 20 magazines that are at the cash wrap.
Right.
And
scientific people.
Yeah, you know, like, yeah. And what's going on is Tom
Katie. That
was
a joke. You missed that. Scientific people.
Oh, the scientific people. Yeah, and what's going on? Does Tom and Katie really have a baby, or is it all fake? You know?
Or is it an alien intervention?
Is it an alien, yes. I mean, just between... Yeah, Jessica's divorce and Brittany's pregnancy and just there's so much of that. So I guess I just want to know, you know, America's insatiable appetite for the trivial and the beautiful and how fluffy it is, but why aren't our scientists as famous as our rock stars and our celebrities?
Are they, is it because of beauty?
I tend to think that what they need to do is get their act together and get the hottest looking male and female scientists and get them great promoters and get them
absolutely
on the cover of People, because... You know, what the problem is, and I'm just taking this lightly, but there is really a serious problem here, in that the United States is falling seriously behind in the world of science. India and China now produce one-fifth of the world's PhDs in science and engineering. 60% of scientists working today in the United States are foreign-born, and they're going to go back to their countries.
It's hard to study science when you're wearing a grill. You laugh, but
you might
there's something
study
to it.
The science of grilling, you know, that could be part of it. So anyhow, there's a worldwide shortage of scientists, but the United States, we're having a bigger problem. And indications are that we're still a world leader, but we're very much in decline. And there's all these barometers that everybody looks at, but American scientists published 31% less scientific papers in 2001, down 38% since 1988. Federal grants for younger scientists, the money that they received, has plummeted. And the proportion of science and engineering doctorates awarded in Asia and Europe is rising, but the numbers in the U.S. are flat. We import our scientists, but we're not growing them in this country, and our military advantage isn't going to last unless we have scientists. Right now, all of our labs are manned, but like I said, they're with scientists that aren't from here. So we're talking about all facets of science, from fusion research to particle physics to wind and solar power and space exploration. Europe and Asia have
pulled
ahead.
We need to make science rad.
We need to make science cool again. And one of the biggest problems is that our public school system has totally fallen behind, probably because everybody's so worried about what they look like.
Right.
And all their cell phones and, you know, who's the hottest celebrity. And, you know, it's just our values are a little screwed up. But
can I just say something real fast?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When this article came on the Dallas Morning News about the grilling, they had a... bulletin board where people could talk about what they thought about the article.
Right.
And I would say I read through all of them, probably about 90% of everybody said, this is ridiculous. They should wear these school uniforms.
Yes.
And you know, almost, I shouldn't say almost all, but a lot of the countries I've traveled to, you always see the kids in school uniforms.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why we don't do
well,
that in this country.
There are certain parts in the United States
that do.
And it's really cut down on...
It really seems to make sense.
Yeah.
It really does.
It does, because then you don't have to... compete in their popularity about who wears what clothes and who's got the most expensive clothes.
Can start
and
competing on academics.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too. Business Week had an amazing story at the beginning of May called Red Flag and the Brain Game, and it was about America's dismal showing in college programming and now how China, India, and Eastern Europe are closing the talent gap. And they talked about
wow.
why U.S. schools are not producing computer programmers. Now, it's sort of a big wake-up call because, you know, we sort of put ourselves on the map in the world of computer science. But now, you know, China and India are of 900,000 engineering graduates of all type every year, triple the number of U.S. grads. And the reason that the U.S. grads are not wanting to continue into computer programming is they're afraid they're going to lose their jobs to their counterparts, and they think,
right.
And they think that they can make more money in business and leadership. So only 1% of college freshmen are planning on majoring in computer science.
Well, you know, if you're outsourcing 80% to 90% of software jobs, sorry, you're not going to have people going, woo, can't wait for a career in software and programming, because there's not going to be any jobs. So that's
are you concerned about them? Since you're...
Am I concerned for my job? Well,
not your job. And I just mean in general, do you see this as a big problem? Because you know this industry.
I think that... That's the nature of the world. This labor is always going to be done at the cheapest places, just like Walmart products are made in China and Korea. Software is going to be developed in India and the Ukraine and Poland, and that's the way of the world.
And so what's going to be left for us? Celebrities, right?
Podcasting.
Podcasting and celebrities. That's
celebrities.
All we're going to have.
Yeah, but actually, we're going to Hollywood. The scientists.
Yeah, the analysis.
Hot scientists. That's yeah. What's going to be our legacy.
That's right. We're going to have three hot ones, but everybody knows their name.
That's right. And they're going to have one names,
that's
you
right.
know, because that's what's really cool.
It'll be some uncool name, too, like Henry.
Right. Yeah, you know, exactly.
It's going to be
perfect.
The coolest
some
hot
geek
scientist.
One. Yeah, that's great. Henry.
But really what they chalk it up to is U.S. students becoming complacent, we're not hungry enough, and there's a zillion distractions on campus.
Yeah.
And that we don't want to study enough anymore, and so we don't feel threatened, we're not exerting the effort. And, you know, it's just another sign of the decline of Western civilization.
It's all the decline of all the great empires. It's
That's
like
right, it is.
You have it too easy.
When we export your thinking skills, you know, to a country that pays a fraction of the cost.
Right, right. Well, that's very sad.
Cold brains, unmoved, untouched, unglued, alone at last. And no thoughts, no mind to rot behind a trail of disasters. A final curse.
Well, I have an article here that was in, this is academic, it's in a Journal of Political Economy, and I did not write down the authors, but they're two respected economists, and this has something to do with, these are American economists.
Henry and Milton.
And scientists.
Probably.
I don't know. But their thesis is examining the economic asset and dynamics of wives and whores.
Wives and whores?
Yes, wives and whores.
Economic?
The sort of that they're comparing them economically.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Oh, because a wife actually, if you were going to pay her, she actually makes a couple $100,000 a year.
Right.
Something like that.
Something like that. Well,
okay.
This was like a year ago in this journal. And but by the way, the reason I'm bringing this up now is because you're talking about the decline of American scientists. You know, these guys are like probably spent a year of their hard work and great brain power to assess whores and wives.
This is what our economists are doing, all right?
Yes, exactly. So the thesis here is that marriage occurs when it's profitable for both people. Can be purchased is sex can be purchased, cleaning can be purchased, feeding can be purchased, and other typical services. The only thing that really can't be purchased is sort of children and the ability to procreate. That's the one thing that kind of makes marriage more valuable than whores.
But I will say now you can purchase.
Well, there's certain black market things.
Mm, no. You can go and buy sperm.
Okay.
Because I know women my age who do it. You go and you buy sperm, you pick them, and men are really not required in this whole process anymore except for that one purchase of a sperm.
That explains all the money I made in college.
Your mother will love that.
I didn't. Although there were always ads in the college paper. I don't know why I didn't. I mean, how hard is it? Just go make a deposit and get, like, beer money. Anyway, wives, they determine that wives are kind of like wine. This is interesting. Consumption does increase as income rises. And so as a result, you find actually in the more profitable countries, the more L8, what do you call it? G8.
G8. Yes.
You probably find less prostitution than, say, in the bottom eight, which is kind of interesting. And they also said they did a historical analysis of how much prostitutes make over time.
Okay. Because they have been around a really long time.
Oh, since the beginning of man.
The oldest profession,
right? That's right. That's right. And it's consistently made a lot more money than a otherwise skilled woman that's like in the business field or in the trades field. A lot more money.
Such as myself.
Right.
Okay.
Well, you're a
so a
high level degree.
A prostitute would make more than me with my MBA.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right. Probably so. They have a theory. And the theory is that they're making the assumption that sort of prostitute doesn't get married. They're saying that the theory is that the prostitute pays, her pay has to take account of the opportunity cost that she's losing for foregoing the marriage and the market earnings associated with marriage, which they have also come up with in this argument. So,
but she also has to pay her... She has a lot of overhead, too.
Well, no. As a matter of fact, I'm glad you mentioned
that
because they took that into account. But what they said is it's not only a low-skilled job, but there's really very few upfront costs. They said, okay, stilettos and, you know, a couple pieces of sexy clothing.
There's a pimp.
You know.
That takes a cut, a big cut. Or the whatever the service is.
Well, I think they're probably looking at the money she makes above and beyond after the pimp cost goes away. I didn't read the article. I just read the summary of it. But, yeah. So there's really no major thesis except these guys are kind of playing around with the idea. And there's a lot of holes in the argument, but they're kind of playing around with the idea of wives and hookers as economic entities. And that at the end of the day, the only reason somebody like me would get married, I guess, in theory, this is a hole in the argument, is to have kids. Because kids can't quite be economized as easily as things like sex. And... I would think love. Where does love enter the equation?
does love have a price?
Does love
apparently
have a price?
Well,
I mean, I guess you could pay somebody to go on vacations or pay somebody to care about you. Yeah, I don't know. That's weird. And I guess I could pay for nursing when I get older. But so anyway, that's what American scientists are working on.
All right. Well, speaking about that, you can actually buy food. Did you know that Americans now spend half of every food dollar at restaurants? Oh, and the fine restaurants they are, too.
I bet they only go to the finest.
Only the finest. Consumer Reports actually did a big poll, and 66,000 readers told Consumer Reports what their favorite restaurants are. And I thought some of them were really interesting. They're classified 3 different types of restaurants.
Well, I mean, by definition, it's a biased question, because by definition, it has to be a chain, because... good restaurants
would only be
in one city.
Well,
right?
that's like a Zagat's guide, though. Zagat's would tell you what those are.
Okay,
that would be rated. But yes, by definition, these are chain restaurants divided into 3 categories. White tablecloth chains like Morton's or Ruth Chris.
Okay.
Casual dinner houses like Claim Jumper or Macaroni Grill.
Okay.
Or family restaurants like Denny's or Shoney's or Friendly's.
Okay.
So they... put them in those 3 categories, and they asked.
What about fast food?
No, they didn't care about fast food in the survey.
Well, actually, that makes it more interesting.
They didn't care.
Yeah.
But 14 of the 20 winners are newcomers, and they're saying that one of the trends they're seeing is that there's all these niche chains, a niche chain actually opening up, such as the one by the former governor of Tennessee, a blues-themed barbecue chain called Red Hot and Blue.
I've heard of it, okay.
Or Bravo Cucina Italiano.
Haven't heard of that one.
Home of faux Roman ruins.
Home of what?
Faux Roman ruins.
When you said faux, I was thinking of the Vietnamese soup, huh?
No,
faux. Faux is in F-A-U-X, okay.
F-A-U-X, yeah. Bonefish Grill, a dark, boisterous bistro. Haven't been there.
Boisterous.
Either.
Now, how do you make boisterous? How do you say,
I guess they just pump up the volume level and everybody yells.
Yeah, exactly. They must.
That's it.
Wow, you guys are boisterous. Yeah, that's what we're going for.
That's right. And now with the plethora of celebrity chefs and TV cooking shows, they're actually now catering to regional and ethnic dining. So that's the new trend also in chain restaurants.
How can a chain, does that mean a national chain would take on regional
regional
attributes?
Regional cooking chains are expanding outside of their particular region. Like Papado's Seafood, Cajun cuisine. You can find that anywhere now.
Or like Le Madeleine, maybe, which is a Dallas chain. Maybe that could potentially sprout wings as...
That's
of course,
right.
It's Dallas, and it's really French. It's weird, but, that's right. You know, whatever.
That's right. And also, takeout is taken off. That's the other trend, too, is that dining trend in takeout, 90% of waiter service restaurants will prepare food to go. So, so you want to hear the winners?
Yes, I do.
Incredibly, oh, it's so suspenseful. Okay, for special occasions, if you really want to impress someone, you know where you got to take them? Capital Grill. That was the top pick.
Capital Grill.
Capital Grill.
I didn't know that was a chain.
It's a chain. See, you didn't realize it was a chain, but it is a chain. It's good for expense accounts.
I've never heard of it. Have you been?
No, but I know there's one in Dallas. There's one in New York. It's a steakhouse.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be top of my list, but okay.
No.
For takeout, where would you think people would want to go to have takeout food?
Maybe Macaroni Grill.
Outback Steakhouse.
Ugh. Really? Why? What's the big takeout item there?
I don't know.
The bloomin' onion, mate.
I guess that's good after you drive home 20 minutes
onion. Yeah, the 3,000 calorie bloomin' onion. There's veggies, mate. It's good for you.
Okay, seafood. Where would you go for seafood if you think of seafood chains?
I would think Rockfish is fairly safe as a chain. It's probably pretty decent, even though I kind of stay away from chains.
McCormick and Schmidt. Hasn't that been around forever? I think that's a dance club, like, at night when I was in my teens.
So I don't think we have one in Dallas, do we? Because I haven't heard of it.
I don't know. Huh. I've been places where there are some. I just know it is a disco at night. Oops. I probably will offend the owners of McCormick & Schmidt. For good food at a good price, takes top honors would be Claim Jumper. Ooh.
So I don't know Claim Jumper either. Do we have one in Dallas?
I have not seen one here, but I know they're in Southern California.
What kind of food is it?
Bad. No.
Claim Jumper is the name of the biggest intermediate ski run at I think it's Jackson Hole.
Well, it's also a chain, so maybe that's where it's based on. It does have sort of a Gold Rush theme.
Is it? Well, it might be Park City. I can't remember now. Okay.
Italian food, best chain. According to readers of Consumer Reports, Carrabba's Italian Grill.
You know, I've been to Carrabba's because there's one real close to here in Lakewood, and it's not bad. I mean, again, I hate the idea of going to a chain. I just feel so, I don't know, genericized, like I lose my individuality when I go to a chain.
Well, you sort of are.
Is that horrible?
You sort of know what you're going to get maybe before you go, and at least you hope you do. Right?
But that's the reason why they're so popular, is because you feel comfortable. You know what you're going to get. You know what the ambiance is going to be like.
Right.
But I don't know.
How about Mexican?
Mexican.
Abuelo's Mexican Food Embassy.
Yes, they call it the Embassy.
Yep, the Embassy.
Yeah, in fact,
top honors.
Yeah, I've been there. It's okay.
I've not been there.
Yeah.
And that's
right.
Not everywhere. That's got to be regional because I hadn't seen one until I got here.
Okay.
And for unusual dinner houses. Okay, now think outside the box. What's a big chain that might be considered unusual?
I don't
it's so hard.
Non sequitur.
P.F. Chang's.
Oh, come on. You know, I used to, when that place first came to town, there was such a buzz on it. And I went and I thought, you know, that lettuce wrap thing at the appetizer that you have to have is pretty decent tasting.
Really good.
But, you know, since then, I've gone probably 3 or 4 times. There's a P.F. Chang in the parking lot where I work. And you know what? The food there sucks. I mean, it's just not very good. In fact, every dish tastes exactly the same. So
except for the lettuce wraps.
Except for the lettuce wraps. Yeah, go for the lettuce wraps. Don't get anything else because it's generic. It's generic crap.
They are the hardest food to eat too. So make sure you like have a bib on. They make vegetarian ones that are actually okay.
Wow.
So, all right, off of the topic of food.
All right. Well, that's very interesting. By the way, on food, I should mention for those of our listeners in the Dallas area, KRLD is having their annual restaurant week. I think it's the first or second week of August. Make your bookings now. I'll have a link to this on the website. Make your reservations. What it is for $30. For some of you, I know it's expensive, especially if you have families, but these are restaurants that you would go and pay $100, $200 to go to. For $30, you get 3 courses, and actually, if you go to Central Market and buy something, I think over $10, you get a 4th course for free. So for $30, $10 of that meal goes to a charity, and you get to eat at these great lineup of restaurants, the best restaurants in Dallas, including The Mansion and Abacus and Steel and Nick and Sam's. I mean, some of the best.
But they do only have a limited selection at that price.
It is a limited selection. Mm-hmm. Absolutely correct. It's a set course menu, right. But it's a great way to sample.
That's right. You can try. You can see the ambiance and try the food. And
absolutely.
A lot of big cities do this now. Like New York has Restaurant Week a couple times a year.
Okay.
And they too do it for I think they do it for poverty and whatever the charity is that they've all gotten together for. But it is a great way to see a restaurant that you haven't tried before.
Yeah. So I highly recommend it. And if you see me, come and say hello. And say, if you come to my table when I'm with friends and you say, "Wow, I love that podcast. You're like my God," I'll slip you $10 under the table later. Okay?
How do people know what you look like?
I have no idea. I guess the website, maybe.
You know, my love is sweet. Yes, I'm cooking for my son and his wife. It's his 30th birthday. Pour berries into my bowl at the milk of 2 months ago. It's molding, Mom, isn't it? I don't give a flying fuck about.
I have got a couple incidences. I'm going to be flying off someplace next week. Oh, yeah. Wow. We had the same story.
That hasn't happened yet.
That hasn't happened yet. Great minds think alike. So, I have two stories on airlines. I'm flying in about a week or so, going on a business trip, and I don't like these things. But you remember Flight 800, TWA 800? It blew up right after takeoff from JFK about 10 years ago. Exactly 10 years ago. The FAA has basically said, you know what? This problem is not fixed yet. And they said it's virtually certain to occur again.
Mm-hmm.
And they said without any significant changes, there could be at least four more in the next 50 years. To remind you what happened, it took off shortly after takeoff. The center tank that was not quite full, in fact, fairly empty, which is one of the reasons, a spark hit that fairly empty tank, ignited the vapors, exploded the aircraft. And this was a 747.
And 230 people died.
230 people, 230 souls were lost. Ooh, that sounds cool, doesn't it? So the FAA wants jetliners equipped with a special nitrogen safety system to prevent this. And the agency would require the new safety system in new planes, as well as retrofitting the 3,800 large U.S. passengers that are out there right now.
That's why it hasn't happened.
Right. Yeah, believe it or not, here is...
That's why. Who's fighting it? The airlines.
The airlines are flying it. Are fighting it. They're saying that it's fatally flawed statistical assumptions the FAA is making that overstate the risk of the future explosions.
Right. But did you see Boeing is going to go ahead and do it?
They're going to do it because they said it's the right thing to do.
And they build nearly 3/4 of the jetliners in use around the world. However, Airbus is not going to do it until it's an FAA regulation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I hate it when you have the same story prepared because then I can't be the expert. No, I'm just kidding. So one thing, the Bob Swaim.
So are you worried when you fly?
Not really. No. One of the NTSB's lead investigators, Bob Swaim, said, if you go strictly by the average number of weeks and months between fuel tank explosions, we are overdue.
Overdue, yeah.
So.
That sounds like bad statistics to me.
Yeah, because things like that are memoryless.
That's right.
See, you're smart. It's just like if you go heads and tails, you get heads, people will say, oh, I'm due a tails.
Right.
No, you're not. Probability is still 50-50 that you're going to get heads or tails. So that's called the Poisson distribution, I think. I don't know. It's been 20 years since I took stats. All right. The second airline thing. Did you see this, Miss Smarty Pants, getting the same stories as I do? Did you see the mice on board American Airlines?
No. I missed that.
Oh, this is horrible. They've got videos of this and everything. So there's a Boeing 767, one of American Airlines, that was being fit in Kansas City in their
hub?
It's not a hub. It's a maintenance facility.
Oh.
When they took the chairs off, they note that they saw mice running all over the floor. One even approached the mechanic and went down its arm. The workers then said they found nests in the air vents, dead mice in the emergency oxygen masks. and droppings all along the whole edge of all the aircraft surfaces. This is a serious safety issue because, you know, what one guy said, you know, you take a rodent like that, it could either be a mouse or a rat, and they get inside the airplane someplace. There's electrical wiring.
Yeah,
they chew through it.
Right.
And it could be a catastrophe. It took an employee at American Airlines to whistleblow on there. And I'm an ex-American Airlines employee. So this kind of sucks because American's a good company. Well, this is really bad. Apparently, this whistleblower said they flew this plane repeatedly between New York and L.A. even after the airline knew of the mice problems. In fact, mechanics later found that the mice had chewed through wiring for the public address system. Not that that's a safety issue with the public address system.
But what if they had picked the hydraulic jet or the hydraulic brake cord?
Well,
and couldn't land.
Yeah, exactly. But I understand the mice don't want to die. So they're gonna you know.
But they
select.
Don't know what they're eating. Did they eat the
They're smart.
Did they eat the airline food? No.
They not even they would eat that.
they ate the cords to the PA system.
Yeah. So I am flying American Airlines next week.
But I flew American from L.A. to JFK. That is so annoying that they would have let that happen.
Yeah. So you were probably on the mouse-infected plane.
If there would have been an accident with that plane and then to find out what it was, the outroar of what would have happened, with the bad PR they would have gotten.
Yeah.
I mean, if something had happened, it's bad enough now that they're going to get bad PR.
Yeah. So. And now they're predicting, I guess next month, they're predicting snakes on planes.
Is that stupid movie? That's the movie. Oh,
it's just such a natural. you know, American Airlines has had to put these mice there for purposes of PR for the movie.
Yeah, because we need snakes to eat the mice, right?
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
That's how we're going to control them. We're going to let the snakes loose.
It's a great idea. Well, Gretchen, that's going to do the show this week.
All right, Jeff, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, and good, better to talk to our listeners.
That's right.
If you want to give us a call, I can't remember our phone number. I didn't write it down this time, and it's brand new. So go to the website and give us a holler. Nobody ever calls us. And Mom, quit calling. And I guess we'll see you next week.